Chapter 2. They leave town the last week of August, the great silver bus choking and rattling and shuddering across town, along Columbus Avenue, then 9th Avenue, West 41st Street, and then they're taking their place in the queue for the Lincoln Tunnel. Millions of tons of Hudson River roaring above them. Little Miles and Danny running up and down the aisle, whooping and shrieking because they've never left Manhattan before, except for that trip out to the beach at Fire Island last summer. And then, suddenly, they're out of the city, and the greenery of Jersey is flashing by, Jesus noticing for sale signs on the houses, lots of them, before he turns round to survey the bus. There's Bob, twitching and muttering and staring out the window at the back. Gus and Dottie singing and uncapping the T-bird at 10 a.m., Meg sniffing and sweating and strewing dirty Kleenexes all over the place. Becky yelling and laughing and chasing her boys around. Fat Chris in the driver's seat, serious in his mirrored sunglasses as he ignores the honks and stares of the late rush hour traffic. Morgan sitting up front, ragging on Chris about what lane they should be in. And Jesus smiling his little smile and strumming his unplugged electric, the huge tires sizzling on hot macadam beneath him as he watches the highway delivering them from Manhattan, that island off the coast of America, into America itself. Chris had christened the old girl the Orca, and he'd spent the last few days decking her out pretty good, too. There was a little fridge up behind the driver's compartment. Bob had helped them wire it into the generator that ran off the engine, and they'd bolted it to the floor so it didn't slide around. It was filled with cold drinks and cold cuts and the little bit of methadone Meg had scraped together to get her over the next few days. Up back, screened off by a curtain, were two double mattresses, one on each side of the bus. They'd taken out some seats and, like Chris had said, they fitted in real nice. There was another mattress about halfway down, on the right-hand side as you looked towards the front of the bus. Gus and Dottie slept like they always did, sitting up in their seats, cradling their bottles. Bob never seemed to sleep. So between seven of them, including two kids, three doubles would be about right. There was even an old TV and VCR wired in. Morgan reckoned you could pick up VHS tapes for a buck or so at truck stops now that everyone was switched to DVD. Chris had been right, Jesus thought, as Morgan came swaying down the aisle, handing Jesus a thick joint as he passed. It was nice having all the space. So what if their top speed wasn't much more than 60? American pop stars started going out live the day after Labor Day, which gave them nearly 10 days to get to L.A. They just had to cover roughly 250 miles every day, which, with traffic and rest stops and general snafus, meant about 6 or 7 solid hours driving per day. No sweat. Well, actually, lots of sweat. The one thing even Bob hadn't been able to coax into working was the bus's ancient air conditioning system. But, hell, Jesus had experienced worse. It was nothing like the dry heat back in Israel. Now that was a motherfucker, like sticking your face in a hot oven every morning. Hey there. Jesus looks up. Becky is standing over him, holding a videotape. She taps it against his knee. Let's do it. Jesus groans. Shit, do we have to? I mean, now? Come on, you gotta get an idea of what you're getting into. He sighs and puts the guitar down on the seat next to him, allowing Becky to help pull him with her outstretched hand. They stagger down the rocky aisle, holding on to the metal seat rims for support, passing Morgan, stretched out, sleeping. Sit. Becky guides him onto the rows of seats right in front of the TV and VCR and slips the cassette in. Becky was about the only one out of all of them who watched TV regularly. She knew all about American Pop Star, about the first two seasons, about the stars it had created, and the elimination process, and how it worked. It seemed simple enough to Jesus. You went up there every week and did your number, and if enough of the folks back home liked you, then you stayed on the show till the next week. I mean, did he really need to watch the fucking thing? Come on, Bex, do I really need to... She presses a finger against his lips and settles in beside him. A crackling snowstorm of static, then it cuts right into the middle of an episode. A black girl, and this was a big black girl, singing Respect by Aretha Franklin. Now, if you looked at her, whole load of junk in the trunk, huge moon face, eyes closed in passion, Jesus figured you'd probably have said, "Yeah, man, I bet that chick's got some pipes." You'd be wrong. She was butchering Aretha. Wrong key, wrong words. It was like she was singing a song she'd only heard once, being whistled by a man passing her on the street about 15 years ago. She reaches the chorus, screeching,
"R-E-P-T-S-E-C."
"R-E-P-T-S-E-C," Jesus says. Now, the camera pans to a woman Jesus guesses is one of the judges. She's black, too, middle-aged, clearly once beautiful, and she's fighting giggles, stuffing a knuckle into her mouth and glancing nervously to her left and right. "That's Darcy D'Angelo," Becky says. "She's real nice." As the girl starts the next verse, the camera pans to Darcy D'Angelo's left, to a white guy, late middle age, bearded, heavy set. He has a hand over his face and is peering at the girl through a gap in his splayed fingers. "That's Herb Stutz," Becky continues. "He's like a big-time rock manager. He can be a bit mean sometimes."
"Right," Jesus says, nodding.
"Mean. I get it." The shot cuts back to the girl singing just as the song finishes abruptly on a shouted, "Respect!" The girl stands there, head thrown back in the silver and blue spotlights, basking in triumph and applause. The applause hearty and surely heavily ironic. Now the camera cuts to a third judge, the only one they haven't seen yet. He's younger, in his late 30s maybe, tanned and handsome in a crisp white shirt, with dark, slicked-back hair that glistens under the studio lights. His expression cannot be read.
"That's Stephen."
Becky almost whispers it with awe. The fact that no surname seems to be necessary, perhaps an indicator of the kind of power this man has.
"Is he nice or mean?" Jesus asks.
Becky just looks at him and shakes her head. First, the camera goes to Herb Stutz, who speaks with a heavy New York accent. So heavy that Jesus figures Herb probably comes from somewhere in the Midwest.
"Well, listen, sweetheart, Simone. You had a good time tonight, right?"
Simone giggles, nods enthusiastically, still on a performance high.
"Well, that's good. You take those happy memories home with you, 'cause I think this is as far as you're going to go on the show."
Simone, looking crestfallen, as Darcy D'Angelo starts to speak.
"Simone, sorry. You know I hate to agree with Herb, but I don't think you're ready for this yet, baby. But you keep on singing, you hear me? You got to work on your voice.
But your performance? My God, girl, you really gave it all you got."
The audience cheering and clapping this sop of kindness as Simone smiles, mouthing, "Thank you," and wiping sweat from her forehead as the camera pans finally to the guy called Stephen, who surprises Jesus with the darkness of his eyes. Noticeable even on this crappy videotape, on this crappy TV, and the chilled formality of his British accent.
"Yes. Thank you, Darcy," he says.
"Unfortunately, there's no point in giving it all you've got if what you've got is a steaming pile of crap."
Darcy D'Angelo shaking her head, the audience booing softly, Simone starting to say something, but the Stephen guy holding his hand up.
"Please. Simone, is it? Please let me speak. I had to listen to you. The least you can do is listen to me for a minute, don't you think? I mean, I'd like to speak, if that's okay with you."
"Go ahead. I ain't stopping you," Simone says,
defiance bristling in her now, arms folded.
It's actually an insult, he continues, for us to have to sit here and be put through this. You know that, don't you? I mean, what do you do for a living?
I work at the In-N-Out Burger and...
Right. So, if I came down there and ordered 15 burgers and I stood and watched you make them all and then I said, actually, I don't eat hamburgers, you'd be pretty pissed off at me for wasting your time, wouldn't you?
Listen, Simone says, a ghetto edge in her voice now. I know I can...
You don't know anything, love. Zero. You're a waste of space. The audience gasps. Get off! Stop wasting my time!
Simone, close to tears now.
Right, Darcy says, turning to him angrily. Fine. You didn't like the girls singing. You don't need to... Oh, get back in your box, Darcy,
Stephen says. I'm doing her a favor. There's no point in encouraging her.
Don't you listen to him, Darcy tells Simone.
No, do listen to me, Simone, Stephen goes on. Enjoy singing to those burgers as you flip them, because that's the most appreciative audience you're ever going to get.
Simone, crying now.
I ain't listening to this,
Darcy says, getting up.
Come on, guys, Herb says.
Oh, yeah. Here we go,
Stephen sighs. Darcy's big walk-off. Boring.
Bye, Darcy.
Bye, Simone. He waves at the crying girl as she's led off. A little wave. Just waggling the fingers, the booing of the audience getting louder.
You're a jerk,
Simone shouts through her tears as she leaves the stage.
That's right,
Stephen says. I'm a jerk. Next.
Can you stop it there?
Jesus says. Becky leans forward and hits the pause button, stopping it on a grainy shot of this guy, Stephen's face, his smile savage and laconic at once.
I don't understand, Jesus says.
What? Becky asks.
That girl, she was awful, right?
Yeah.
I mean, when I auditioned in New York, they were rejecting people who could sing better than that.
So, I'm guessing these people, he gestures towards the blurred, pixelated still of the guy Stephen's face, or someone who worked for them had heard her before she walked onto the show that night, yeah?
Of course.
So, why would they have her on the show if she's that bad? Becky looks at Jesus for a long time, looking into those clear blue eyes, not completely clear, a little pink in the whites from all the joints going around the bus. The blonde hair tumbling down like sunshine. Real sunshine pouring through the window behind him, exploding off the hair, making him seem to glow.
Yeah, Becky thinks, not for the first time. What you have here is a true innocent.
Does Becky think Jesus is Jesus? Not for a second. He is someone who helped her for no reason. He's never even made a pass at her, even though she's seen him hit on, or more usually, get hit on by other girls.
Becky often wonders why that is.
For entertainment. To humiliate her, I guess, Becky says, feeling bad that she even understands what he cannot.
Wow. So when that guy, the British guy, Stephen
Stelfox,
when he got angry that she was wasting his time, he already knew that she was going to waste his time.
Yeah, I guess so. Right, Jesus says.
So he was just pretending to be angry? So it's all like a big act?
Yeah. Entertainment. Becky gets up and starts ejecting the tape.
But
he isn't done.
That girl, she really thought she could sing, didn't she?
A lot of them do.
Do you want a soda? I mean, it's possible she wasn't quite right in the head.
A lot of them aren't.
So what you're saying, if I'm getting all this right, is that what people really seem to like for entertainment these days is watching mentally unbalanced people getting bullied and humiliated on TV? It would, appear so, JC. I guess we're pretty uniquely fucked up, huh?
Becky heads down the aisle towards the fridge.
No, Jesus thinks, watching her go. Not unique.
He remembers a story one of his boys told him way back.
Matthew? Or was it John? Or Luke? Shit, his memory.
Well, it was more than a couple of thousand years ago, and they used to drink a lot of fucking wine back then. Anyway, one of them had been traveling through some Roman province, and he got dragged along to these games they were having in this little makeshift arena. The Romans loved that shit. They had a bunch of prisoners, criminals, politicals, the usual stuff, who they were making fight in these games, making little weedy guys fight big, tooled-up motherfuckers, lions, wild animals, shit like that. And a couple of them, these prisoners, were handicapped guys. Retards, they used to call them. And they made a couple of these retarded guys fight a fucking bear. He said the guys didn't know what the fuck was going on, just stumbling around, drooling and gibbering. And this bear came in and just ripped the two of them to fucking pieces, man. Just ate them up right in front of these people. And the people were laughing their asses off.
So here we go again, Jesus thinks.